over the Bay Area and baseball and all sorts of good stuff. And I do have to give a shout out to the album artwork here. One of my favorite styles of photography and graphic design is that kind of repeating, stuttering, kind of granular style where it's lots of the sharp edges. I'm used to run a little indie label, and I made a piece of music that was all about coin samples, and then I took a picture of an old like Sumerian coin, but it had that same kind of idea of that kind of central focus and then extending that repeating, but that kind of doom, 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 mathematical repetition kind of thing. I think that album artwork and liner notes and design and the physical packaging of an album has more than just an effect to the listener. I think it ties everything together because it gives you a mindset and an ethos of the album, like we were talking about earlier. Maybe you could speak to a little bit of that photography that kind of comes with the liner notes and the album.
Yeah, for sure. I share your passion around album art for sure, and art in general. Mentors and folks like Chad Van Galen, and just, you know, his work and what he's done. And again, another guy that has all of a sudden become somewhat accessible to me, which has been amazing. And so anyway, but this image on the front album was taken in Daly City, just outside of San Francisco, and I shot it on 35 millimeter film, probably in 2000, I want to say early. No, I guess it was probably 2011, something like that.
Nice.
But, yeah, just kind of, you know, had this old car in front of this, you know, sort of these little box houses that, you know, PJ Harvey would be really fond of in terms of a neighborhood. Everything sort of looks the same, and just sort of the colors grabbed me, and I actually released the artwork as part of a single for Lights and Machines off of Elements Of, which you might not be able to find anymore. But I remember my pal Steve Bays was like, dude, the artwork's so sick on this. And I was like, yeah, I really like this image. So it made the cover front and back. And I guess it's somewhat resonant. And then for this one, I put together liner notes and just grabbed some appealing images off the internet. They're not mine, but it was something that was sort of speaking to me around this vintage
service station in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Yeah, it is that. It's kind of like these old buildings or places that, you know, hold significant meaning to some degree in terms of you're searching for some kind of representation or service or, you know, some sort of need that we need to fill. It kind of came together. And you know, what's cool about this one, too, is and all my albums, at least on the physical record itself, you know, if just from collections of drawings. The one on side B here is just like this time capsule of some, you know, my friend Wayne Nang, who is a Order of Canada potter, who living on Hornby Island and much, much older than me. He's passed away now, but I sort of got to sit with him in his Zeddon garden, and that's sort of a visual representation of that interaction.
The first time there were two things that I didn't notice the first time I looked at this album when I was just playing it the other day. The first one is that the actual disc itself is not just a straight black vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of speckled white and gray in there too, which I always found a color disc or picture disc or different pressings to really just be a bit of a nod and a treat to those of us who enjoy physical media and who appreciate it and want to continue its existence. And the other thing was in the liner notes, all of these kind of gas stations, service stations out in the middle of the desert, they all have the track names put on top of it. So it, of course, has the lyrics you can sing along at home, but it ties them together, and it brings this thematic thing. And we were talking about kind of driving across the desert, and that kind of, you have these destinations, and it's the same kind of way with an album. You have these tracks, and if you listen to them separately, you'll get an experience. But the same way because we used to drive a lot from the Bay to Utah, and so you're crossing the mountains and then the desert and then the desert, and you have a journey more so than just a single track when you listen to an album in its entirety. and I just love it. It's so cool.
Yeah, that was sort of the ethos and the impetus of, you know, I want to create physical media. I want to create albums, and again, looking at the track listing, it's meant to be that journey and stopping along the way. And yeah, let's keep the album format alive. It's really, really important now. And I was watching some entrepreneur, and he's talking about the future, and he says, you know what the future is going to look like? It's going to look like analog.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to go to shows. People are going to buy records. People are going to put their phones away.
Mm-hmm.
Go to a restaurant, you know.
So I heard someone say that when they hang out with their friends, they like to do this thing called going 90s, where you leave your phone at home, you bring your wallet and your brain.
Right. That's great. Yeah. And we're lucky enough to remember that. And,
yeah.
You know, my son who's coming up, he's already in that. And,
yeah.
You know, for us that remember, you know, we have to continually be that bridge generation of making sure even some of these ancient practices that bring you closer to consciousness, like they're really important to explore. They've been, you know, they've been mapped out and identified for millennia. And, you know, again, that's sort of, again, the impetus around Pranatrix is mm-hmm. this life force idea. And you know, it originally started as you know, a bit of a parody in terms of, you know, I was teaching a lot of yoga and you know, up, you know, working with a lot of, you know, young girls that were really bendy and looked really great in Lululemon stuff, and you know, how could I take it and make it like, okay, there's a bigger expression around creativity and consciousness, and can I somewhat trick you into thinking or seeing some of these ideas through mm-hmm. my creative outlet. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
The traditions that were kind of laid down by a lot of people, I do enjoy a lot of Qigong and traditional martial arts, and it's these same things. You see these practices that have been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and they are very much sticking around for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that physical media is around, the same way that books, painting, mm-hmm. you know, etching and woodblock printing, those kind of things. The traditions stay alive because people realize not only the hard work that our forefathers put into it, but the necessity of it
mm-hmm.
in such a fast-paced, hyper-realistic world. There are these things that remove us from that, I would call it discombobulation mm-hmm. of digital. And it takes us back to something. And I remember being at a friend's house, and we were hanging out, and there was maybe about 8 or 9 of us there, and we just put on an LP and we all sat and listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe those of you out in Radio Land, grab a Pranatrix album, put it on and just listen to it and appreciate it for not just an expression, but an experience, and take time to let that be the only thing you do in that moment. I think there's such a huge push to be doing many different things at many different times, and it's nice to kind of have that singular focus as
for
well.
For sure. Yeah, no, that's a great plug. I like what I saw Bahamas say the other day, and he was talking about his kids, and he said, you know, when they get bored, it's a wonderful thing, you know. His kids are a little bit older than mine, but even in that boredom, when the mind is racing, you know, how do we find just that bit of stillness? How do we connect with the breath? And are we able to slow the mind down to a point where we can observe, where we can feel, where we can understand more clearly the subtle sensations of the body? And I know that we share an interest in those healing arts as it's really vital for now. And talk about the future, right? Like, it is going analog, it is going to that place where, you know, we can connect in with ourselves first and foremost, feel that oneness inside, so that, you know, eventually we can see it represented in the outer world.
Absolutely. Can you introduce us to Side B and the tracks coming up?
Yeah, for sure. Side B, this first track, Courtney's Eyes, is a really interesting one. I've been working in the public sphere for a long time, and this was due to an interaction with an unhoused person who was clearly an addict coming into a youth facility. And it just really stuck with me, and it's it ultimately, the message is around empathy. It's around this idea of having love in our heart, and that's for not only the person that is unhoused, but for those of us that are observing and judging that. So, it was definitely moving in and around the post-punk, alt-rock, straight-ahead kind of idea. And then we follow it up with Superstar, which is sort of this teenage angst, again, alt-rock, post-punky idea around my baseball career and having to come to terms with, you know, not getting to the place that I wanted to get to. And then, you know, dealing with external pressures specifically, like, yeah, again, the teenage angst bit, like the push from parents or my father, and deciding that that relationship obviously is really important. And, you know, I love my dad a lot, and you know, how do we manage to come to terms with the amount of effort that we've put into something and it not going our way ultimately. Smear Campaign is probably the one of the more let's say aggressively in terms of lyrically, sort of this, it's really a reaction to a neighbor situation that I had living in Kitsilano that was just so untenable. And, you know, we had been harassed by this person for the better part of 4 years. And this was the great outlet to it in terms of like, yeah, your game is soft and lame, so your smear campaign kind of thing. And it really went that way. It just went so insanely sideways that, you know, it's just a nice way to wrap it up. And not, you know, with a lot of folks, sometimes in situations we just need to learn how to get out of the way, right? Don't even participate. So that's a nice psychedelic 8-minute track, 7-minute track, a long one. And then Electric Beams sort of follows up with this, dreamy psych pop, kind of dream pop idea. It's a bit of an MGMT ripoff in terms of electric feel, but Electric Beams and you know, just sort of dancing in and around, you know, where we are in our perception of the world and how we can and make it a little bit more cohesive together. Somewhere Land is the final track on the album, and this one was written right at sort of the 11th hour, just, you know, kind of came to me as I was sort of 8-9 tracks in, and you know, was able to put it down on acoustic guitar with a drum machine and then fill it in with some electric guitar and some synth stuff. It's really about, you know, making a decision and not getting caught in Somewhere Land, you know, going one, not having 1 foot in, 1 foot out, but, mm-hmm. you know, making sure that we go 2 feet in mm-hmm. And, you know, pursue what's in our hearts. The whole album was mixed by my good friend Avro Music, Adam Percy, at his studio, Neon Pine Studio on Denman Island.
Nice.
And it was great because I brought him all the stems and the tracks, and what I really wanted to do was record the drums with him to get a good sound. So nice. We were able to do that. So it was fun to try and play drums on each track, and he helped fill it in. We definitely have a co-write on the Dagger's Fire and Avro Music. If you can check out his stuff, he just released an album and he's fantastic. Really this post-punk synth, electric synth style music, which is super dancey and great. So he's my pal. He's playing synth in the band, and it's just been great to build with him.
Absolutely. Side B, Pranatrix, Infiniteness, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll be right back. side B of a vinyl. I love it. I love that we have the opportunity to not only talk about, you know, the genesis of this album, but what led up to it, its creation, its recording, as well as you mentioned on Denman Island. Fantastic. There's a lot of really cool recording studios, like the one that's close to Shawinigan Lake as well, too. And the Vancouver Island and the Gulf Islands especially have these little pockets of sound and high quality recording studios. And I think it's because a lot of people realize that obviously not only is it a nice quiet environment, but there's this connection to the forest, to the land, to the ocean and the islands that you don't get anywhere else when you're doing, you know, say at Mushroom Studios or Little Mountain Sound or something like that. And how long would you say this took from writing? Mm-hmm. It's probably in different phases, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. especially even the cover art, you know, was about 15 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there are these little seeds that happen and don't fully blossom mm-hmm. for a decade or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's in terms of time, time's a really interesting thing. And with this album, I mean, I'm looking at Islands of the Sun. I'm looking at Biscuits. I'm looking at Dagger's Fire. I'm like, I wrote those right before my son was born in 2016. You know, Courtney's Eyes is brand new. Superstar I wrote in 2011. Mm. You know, and I've had it. It actually made this little CD. I had this little project called AC Garage. And I played Music Waste 1 year and, you know, was just burning CDs. And actually the original track is on that. So amazing. If you have one of those, you're really lucky, because I probably made 10 of them, but I do have a couple copies of them and don't have a CD player and can't play them. But, you know, I think that the recording space is really interesting. As an independent artist, I learned very quickly that I had to learn how to produce my music myself. Mm-hmm. And so that involved buying Pro Tools, that involved, you know, spending the time learning Logic, hanging out with people that knew it, figuring out how to track my vocals so I actually like them, figuring out how to sing vocals so I actually like them. So all of those bits has been, it's really 20 years in development to then get to the point where I'm like, okay, it's go time. I want to release 3 albums in this sort of accretive sequence, like a triptych painting. Every album has its own individual identity, but when you listen to them collectively or when you look at them collectively, it's a deeper meaning. It's a bigger canvas in terms of you know, songwriting, production. It's meant to culminate with this album, to go, here's my final project. I've built myself a little way out in that it's called Infiniteness, and if I want to keep going, then obviously it could keep going. But, you know, that was the impetus, is to try and release sort of 3 albums in 3 years and you know, have it there as a collective experience, a listening experience where, yeah, there's the catalog, you know, there's the catalog. And now I feel like I've scratched that itch. I've put it out in the world and I'm open to other projects and other collaborations.
Where can people find you on the world hive brain, as my mom likes to call it?
Right. Yeah, I mean, and if you type in Pranatrix, one word, you're going to find me online.
Pranatrix.
Right, not the more edgy tricks, T-R-I-X. But yes, which I've heard a lot. I've also heard Pranatrix, like no. I'm training piranhas.
Prana, like the breath.
Yeah, like the life force. Yeah, for sure. And you can find me on the internet, website. Instagram's a really great way to get a hold of me. I think that's sort of the medium that I've tried to build out the most. And obviously Spotify and those places, is it seems that that's sort of you know, the way that people are consuming their music, and whether we like it or not doesn't really matter. I want my music to be heard, and you know, so those are good ways to get a hold of me. Yeah, pretty easy. I mean, I don't think I'll get my phone number out on the
air. No. We have station policy against that. What I can recommend people, of course, go listen to and support the album Infiniteness. It has just released yesterday. Other new releases just from the fall, and maybe we can come back another time and talk about this, because it deserves another episode. The Doorsteps and Winds projects, and that's a little more of that kind of lo-fi progenitor side, you know, the very beginnings of where Cherished and Elements Of came from. So, of course, 2023, Cherished, 2024, Elements Of, Winds and Doorsteps, that kind of beginning seeds of Pronatrix, and the it almost gives me a little bit of like Microphones or Mount Eerie, you know, in the sense of lo-fi, but it's doing it purposefully. And so I really appreciated that. And then, of course, the brand new one came out just yesterday, Infiniteness. Absolutely, go check it out. Andrew, thank you so much. This was enlightening and fascinating.
Thanks so much, Connor. It's always great to hang out with you. Appreciate it. Radio.